Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat writer at the Center Daily Times, joined as always by Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, it was a kind of long day, but we've made it through it.
Long, Penn State. Dreary day.
No, dreary doesn't do it justice.
Penn State gets the win 63-0 against UMass. John, it was as lopsided, as ugly as we expected for the Minutemen. But yeah, this weather, man, I woke up recording this Saturday night. I woke up Saturday morning and it did one of those where like, I looked at my phone and I was like, oh my gosh, it must be late. Like it's not even light out. Yeah. It was like 7 o'clock. It looked like nighttime all day. Shout out to the fans before we dive into this, who sat through this. Beaver Stadium was, I mean, it was splotchy, but wisely students were sitting under the overhangs. The attendance, which again, it always goes by tickets sold, not butts in seats. It was 105,533, but so many people sat through this game and it just really wasn't much of a game. I was, you know, I'm impressed. By the end of the game, you're like, why are you guys still here? Like, what is wrong with you? But, you know, people were having a good time.
Yeah, there were not many people there by the end. Before we get too far into this, though, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you are watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button there. Leave reviews on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating on there, if you will. Always helps the show out. But no, this was, I remember looking down in the stands, and I think it was in the late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, and I turned to Bob Flounders of Penn Live, and I said, how many people do you think are here? Like 10,000 at this point? Because it really was like, I mean, the game was over at halftime, as we had predicted. Yeah. But like, it was, and it was really rainy at that point too. It was late, and it was cold. I went down on the field at the end of the game. Some of the more veteran reporters stayed under the tunnel and dry.
I wanted to do that.
Yes.
I went out to the field, had my raincoat on, did an about face, and I was like, I'm out of here. I'll be in the tunnel.
Yeah, I had the old Rose Bowl game rain pullover on, so I stayed kind of dry, which was very nice. That was very
effective. Where it also rained all week in sunny Southern California. Yeah,
which is incredible. I've been to, I don't know if I've told you this, I've been to Southern California, I think 5 or 6 times, and it's rained all but one time that I've gone. I went to San Diego twice, and it rained both times. A couple friends who live there said it never rains there, and both times I went, it rained. Which is,
so maybe
I
it's think, you.
Yeah, it's kind of on me at that point. Yeah, but no, I think, like, this was a credit to the fans for staying at however long you did, because I don't think many people really wanted to be there. But this was a blowout win. And honestly, like, it's dominating as a win as you'd want if you're a Penn State fan leading into the Ohio State game.
You know, John, the thing that impressed me, because again, I'm looking at the box score in front of me here. It was 28-0 at the half, but it might have felt like it was like 42-0 because UMass just couldn't do anything. Penn State's defense, again, which I feel like we say this every week, dominant, just absolutely teeing off on UMass. Penn State had 6 sacks in the first half, finished with 7 sacks. But it was just one of those games where, like, right away from the first series, we expected it would be a mismatch in the trenches, and it was so apparent. I mean, it was right away, I'm like, oh, these defensive ends, to the point where I'm like, they actually might, like, really, really hurt someone pretty badly, because it was concerning.
That was something we were talking about, myself, Bob, another friend of the podcast, Johnny McGonigal, Penn Live. Like, we kept saying, like, at some point, like, Penn State kind of needed to take their starters out for the safety of everyone involved, because, like, Tyson Pumachon was, and credit to him for hanging in there and trying to deliver throws, but they teed off on him. Like, they just kept getting after him, kept hitting him. Even, you know, Dennis Sutton got called for roughing the passer on one that I thought was a pretty blatant roughing the passer. Like, the ball was out for a second or two, and then he threw a shoulder into Pumachon's back. But, like, this was an utter domination by the defense from the start. You know, this is one of the best defenses in the country. I don't know how much more you can even say about them on that side of the ball. Right. But I think
I'll say a little bit more, John. Let's hit us
with all the fun stats from this game, because there is some other interesting stuff I think that we should talk about here.
Well, UMass finished up with 109 yards of total offense, 109. At the half, it was something like they had 26 yards, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly. They ran 62 plays, which,
I don't know how that happened.
I remember crazy. None of them. Like, they ran 62 plays and nothing, like, notable happened. Average gain per play, 1.8 yards. Gosh, I mean, this was just one of those games where you're looking at it and you're like, all right, at some point, you know, how much, and Penn State rotated a lot. I mean, I'm looking at the participation report right now, and I'll get snap counts later on tonight and sift through that. And it's going to be a lot, but a ton of freshmen played. Again, this is about building depth. This is about looking toward the future. But when you look at this Penn State defense, to me, the crazy thing is, like, you look at seven sacks, but they're coming from multiple guys. Cam Miller, I thought, had a great game tonight. Two sacks, which...
Outside of getting hit with that punt.
Yes, like two sacks, I would not have... I think it was him.
Yeah.
I would not have projected Cam Miller to have two sacks tonight. Like, just one of those kind of mystifying numbers. But I thought that was it was a big step for him, because he's going to be a big part here when we kind of start looking down the road, because so much of this year is about the talent they have at corner with Kalen King and Johnny Dixon. But yeah, long-term, he's going to be a big part of what they do there in the future. So I thought it was really a positive for him. Gosh, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Deesa Isaac, 2.5 sacks. He was a monster.
Early on,
he was really good. Yeah.
Watching him get off the edge, I remember there were a couple times where I like said in the press box, like, again, out of fear for Pumichon, like, you would see Adisa beat his guy, and I would just go, oh no. Like, you could see the hit coming before, you know, Pumichon did, before, you know, anyone on UMass could do anything about it. And he drilled him a couple times.
The hit, Adisa Isaac and then Dennis Sutton, when they combined for that sack, man, that pocket just collapsed. And that to me, early on was like, okay, that's a tone setter. That's how this is going to be. But the fact that even as Penn State rotated through there, UMass still could not get anything going, which again is a credit to the depth on this defense. The fact that they preserved the shutout. I mean, they kept their foot on the gas. And I think that's, you mentioned, John, in the intro, this is how you want to kind of springboard into Ohio State. Like, if you're a Penn State fan, you do not have much to complain about after today, right? Like, there's, I'll nitpick.
I can find some things.
I was going to say, there's one thing in particular that I think we can nitpick. But go ahead, John. What hairs would you like to split today?
I still think this passing game isn't... I can't even... It's tough because, like, you want to come into this and be able to identify specific things. The passing game still feels just kind of offbeat, I guess I would call it. And I think it's kind of everyone outside of the guys we always talk about, right? Keandre Lambert-Smith, Trey Wallace. Trey Wallace, by the way, I thought was really, really good in his first game back. I know he fumbled. But I thought he was, like, getting open consistently. Didn't always get found.
The 21-yard reception, the catch and run, to me, it looked like he was a kind of next-level player, the way he separated there and broke off. The point I'll – the thing that struck me, comes out with a fumble right away. Then they did take the deep shot to him, right? Yes. Remember, they took the deep shot to him down the sideline, but they didn't connect on that. I haven't seen a replay of it yet.
I have not either.
It looked like it went off his hands.
So there's a lot to take into account given the weather and situation, everything at the stadium.
The weather was horrible, raining. Yeah.
It looked like the throw wasn't bad, but it was a little off target. And leaping for that ball is much harder when the grass is slick, right? Because you go up, you're probably just going to lose your footing. You know what I mean? You're probably not going to get a clean jump. And your hands are wet, your gloves are wet. Like, that felt like, in normal conditions, that's just a completed pass, right? But I think the weather, the circumstances, like, all of it kind of played into it there. I didn't think it was a terrible ball by Drew Aller. I don't know that you necessarily should expect Trey Wallace to come down with it in that situation. You'd like him to, but I don't know if you should, because it is a tough situation. And watching the replays on the big screen, it looked like he outstretched his hands and it hit off, like, the top half of his fingertips. So it's like, okay, it's tough to say he has to come down with that ball. It is something that I'm really.
So would have been a tough catch. Yeah, yes. Definitely. Like, would have been a tough catch. Wallace
in clean conditions, you'd expect him to make it.
But yeah, I mean, and this was. I mean, there were points of this game where it was an absolute downpour. Wallace,
as we found
ended
out when
up,
we went on the field afterward.
That's why some of us stayed in the tunnel. Wallace that's ended true. Up with 3 receptions for 44 yards. The long was 22. I'm sorry, 22 yak yards. The long was 21. So I was right. I'm not making things up. Targeted 4 times. Keandre Lambert-Smith, again, the clear number one receiver, targeted 9 times. Finished with six catches for 30 yards. This was also a big day for the tight ends. You know, we saw Theo Johnson get in the end zone not once, but twice. So that was big. Tyler Warren had one touchdown and should have been two. I'm thinking about because it was the same area on the field, a little bit lower than the Wallace play. Wide open, ball, nobody in front of him.
That one like hit him in the hands. That wasn't like hit him in the fingertips. That hit him, it looked like it hit him in the hands. Should have come down with that. It is tough. You know, you're going through all the tight ends. Those guys were so wide open that it's almost tough to gauge, like, okay, how much of this is just, UMass is the worst defense in college football right now, right? Like, are those guys, they're not getting that separation usually because they're just, they're really great athletes for their position, but like, they're not receivers. They're not going to create as much separation as Lambert Smith and Trey Wallace do. So you have to wonder, like, okay, is this replicable against Ohio State, or is this more of a, they need tight window throws? Like the one, I think it was on the first drive of the game where Drew Aller hit Tyler Warren coming across the middle on a third down. And it was like a sliding grab. And that was like a perfect tight window throw. You know, you trust the big physical, strong tight end to bring the ball in, to have strong hands, you know, to go down and get it. And I thought that was like a good example of, this is the kind of throw that you need Penn State to make against Ohio State, against Michigan. And he did it, you know, against what would be similar coverage against those teams, right? If it's in that situation, right? Because of the tight window. But I do like the tight ends, it almost feels misleading. Like the stats almost feel misleading because they were so open. It was like, okay, is the defense just like, do they have no idea where they need to be right now? Is that what's happening?
Theo Johnson was asked about it after the game, and he did say, he's like, yeah, like I did not expect to be that wide open. Like it was weird. And yeah, I mean, I think it's almost like, so like I teach as an adjunct at Penn State, and sometimes you're like, all right, you have to grade on a curve, right? Because, and if people don't retain the information, maybe it's on them, but if the whole class fails, then it's probably on me. And I think you have to kind of think of this game as that curve where you're like, okay, well, how much of this really applies to the bigger context of the season? How much of it is just that UMass is terrible and even you could underperform and still blow them out? And the thing that I will nitpick with the offense, because you said it just feels like the passing attack, there's some lulls, and I totally agree with you. For me, it was a slow start, and that kind of feeds into that. Like, you come out, Harrison Wallace has that fumble. The next drive, Drew Aller gets sacked on third down to end it. And you're just kind of sitting there like, man, like, this is a team you should be dominating from the jump, coming off the idle week. And I don't know, maybe there's something to that, right? Like, maybe that was part of it, a little bit of a idle week weather hangover. Ooh. Yeah, like, shitty weather, the splotchy crowd. The thing I will say, I mean, that then they put the pedal down and did not let go after that. Credit to Daquan Hardy. You talk about momentum swings. We will, I'm sure, get into this in a bit. A lot of Daquan Hardy talk today. I made the joke. I'll make it on here. Have yourself a day. Feel free for anyone to use that if you'd like or not. I'll be here all day and night. But I mean, to me, you look at that start and you say, okay, you cannot have that next weekend in Columbus. And the whole time this game is going on in my head, I'm saying, well, how does this, you know, how does this translate next week? You cannot come out like that, have a turnover and then have a sack.
I'll push back a little bit on that. Okay. I think that part of this is, we talked about this a little before we started recording. I think Penn State's better than Ohio State, period. Point blank, they're a better team than Ohio State. The 5.5-point spread feels like way too much.
Is that what it is? I didn't know.
Yeah. It started at 10.5 preseason. I think it's going to come down to like 2.5 potentially and just be like, you know, a coin toss, but the home field advantage gives Ohio State the 2.5 points. But like, I almost think they can start that way against almost any team in the country because the defense is just that good, right? Like the offense is, we're not there yet. I think we'll find out a lot more next week, but this might end up just being a top two defense, top three defense in the country that kind of carries a top 20 offense, right? And that top 20 offense always starts a little slower. Because I think when we talk about like needing to start fast, I think it's because, okay, you don't trust the defense to hold its own for a drive or two while the offense gets going. That's
true. Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case this year more than any other year. There have been really good Penn State defenses in the past where, like, no matter how good they were, Ohio State was so good that you couldn't afford to be caught, you know what I mean, slipping early.
Every possession, you felt like you needed to get into a shootout with them. Yeah.
This is not that Ohio State team. Like, Kyle McCord is not that quarterback. We'll talk more about Ohio State next week. But this is – I don't think it's necessarily imperative to get off to the good start or get some momentum early because I think they're just better, right? Like, I think this is, it's kind of going to prove to be a situation where they can afford to maybe have a lull and they'll be fine because the defense can handle it. I think people will probably be surprised when they hear my prediction next week.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not gonna say anything. We'll tease a little bit here, but I do think people will be surprised. But yeah, I think Penn State for the first time in James Franklin's tenure,
they have a really good shot to go in there and win, right?
No, but I think for the first time in his tenure, they're better. Like this, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's one thing to have a good shot to win, right? Because it is like, because it's two elite teams facing each other. To me, this is a top five team.
Wait. You're putting Penn State in the elite category, yes. John. That's okay. Okay.
I think this is one of the top five teams in the country facing a top like 12 to 15 team in the country. Usually that's
wait,
true.
Wait. Who's defined? Who's.
Right. Penn State. I think Penn State is the top five team in the country and Ohio State's closer to 12 to 15. And usually it's the other way around. Right. And that's why they can't afford to do all these things. So
I wanted to stop because, you know, this week, the word elite takes on a whole new meaning when it's Ohio State week after James Franklin's great comment. It was more than 5 years ago. He said that. I was sitting there looking that up tonight. I was an ink-stained wretch at that point. Yeah, already.
that was just before I started covering Indiana over at Rivals when I was there, Indiana men's basketball and recruiting. So that was, it was that long ago. I mean, but yeah, I think like I'm a little scared to use the word elite this week because it's essentially, it feels like it'll make the rest of the question vanish and like people fixate on that. But yeah, I think this is flipped for the first time in his tenure.
And I think we talk about this being, or I think of this as being a complete Penn State team. And to me, like, the one area that we've all been kind of extra critical of, and rightfully so, up to this point has been the special teams, right? Like, we all have our thoughts on the offense, the explosive plays, all of that. But to me, it was like special teams was the one area where I'm like, this could cost them a game. Now, field goal kicking, we're still going to have to see there. I mean, did you catch John Sanders Sahadek did come in the fourth quarter for a couple of extra points?
Some confidence extra points. I noticed those.
Confidence boosters.
It's me calling them the confidence boosters, by the way. No one at Penn State called them that.
Oh, I wrote that too. Yeah, I said these are confidence boosters.
It seems pretty clear. Yeah.
And I think too, like, to me, I mean, this was Daquan Hardy's night. Two punt returns for a touchdown. Penn State school record. I did kind of laugh because
for a season, by the way, right? James said that in the post game. I didn't know that. I knew it was for a game. I didn't know no one had ever had two in a season.
Yeah, so no one's ever done it in the game. I remember, gosh, it was a few years ago where I probably especially kept kind of harping on they haven't returned a kick for a touchdown.
I remember a punt for a touchdown.
Last had a 100-yard rusher and gas was like $2 a gallon type deal. But to me,
that tweet went over well. I'll never forget that tweet.
Great tweet. The special teams, it's trending in the right direction. And the interesting thing tonight was it's like, okay, well, Daquan Hardy and James Franklin even said it afterward. He said tonight Hardy looked special. And James has been really complimentary of Caden Saunders. The fact that he has been mostly shorthanded back there. Saunders did have I believe it was 37-yard return tonight. Yep. But why hasn't Daquan Hardy been your guy all along? Now, granted, remember, he wasn't unavailable for undisclosed reasons early in the year. James Franklin said this was a camp competition. They are looking for more explosive plays in all three phases, right? James Franklin mentioned that Saturday night. Hardy gave that to him. So, John, who's your punt returner next week in Columbus?
Well, I don't know if you saw this, but shout out to... co-worker of mine, Josh Moyer, formerly of the Penn State beat, who made note of this. This was on the BTN broadcast after the game. James said, obviously, he's earned himself a job today about Daquan Hardy. So I think we have our answer there, right? Like, I think this kind of has to be Hardy's job. And I don't even think it's a criticism of Caden Saunders, who has done a really good job back there.
He muffed one punt,
which I don't even know if it's his fault because it was the weekend after, like the week before, everyone was talking about how he had yet to muff a punt. So it was the worst.
James Franklin jinxed him. He totally jinxed him.
I think how can you not? He just returned two punts for a touchdown in one game. And the first punt return, I think I might have just said, oh no, when he like got the first two UMass defenders, because he shook them out of their shoes. They never had a chance, and he just followed his blocking the rest of the way. And you could tell on both that he was going to break it. Because again, we talked about like trying to put it through the prism of they're playing UMass. they're just way more athletic than most of these dudes on UMass. Like, it's an unfair advantage. Well, it's an earned advantage, but like,
don't punt it to him the way they did too. Like the second one, I was like, what?
I'm kind of all right with it. They're there to entertain everybody at that point.
I was just
trying to add to the spectacle.
And I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing? And to me, like, again, you look at this and you say, well, this is a big play. It's a momentum shifting play. The fact that Penn State's first points of the game came on a punt return for a touchdown. Again, that was not on my bingo card today either. But I think when you look at it and you say, and James Franklin said this, he's like, we've got two guys that we feel good in that phase. And I kid you not, John, when we talked with Stacey Collins during the idle week on Zoom, it was on the tip of my tongue. I wanted to ask him, will you give Daquan Hardy a shot as a punt returner? Because we had heard about it in the spring, and I believe he did it last year when Parker Washington got hurt, maybe?
I don't think he's ever returned a punt before this game. I think he's done it in practice because I believe that punt return for a touchdown was also his first career punt return.
Okay, so you might be, but I remember like he was always in the mix. I've seen him do it at practice before.
Well, and he's talked about in the past, like, no, I'm good with the ball in my hands, right? Like, he's talked about wanting to do it. And we saw, if you remember, in the open practice this summer near the end of fall practice.
Where it also was a downpour.
And they had they did the Lions Den drill where guys are essentially off the line, like running at an angle toward each other. And he was one of the guys who had the ball in his hands in this situation. And I can't remember how those reps went because there were like 60 of them. I just remember the Keandre Lambert-Smith and KJ Winston ones. Yeah, those were a lot of fun. But yeah, no, like Hardy is clearly a threat with the ball in his hands and, you know, someone that the more you get him touches, the better, right? And if that's the punt return game, like, I don't know. I wouldn't hate it if they gave him like an offensive play or two. Like, it can't hurt, right? Like, if he's that good with the ball in his hands, you need to scheme something up. Yeah.
Wrinkle
like,
alert. Here we come. It's, flashing
it's the
lights.
Kind of thing. It's the kind of thing I think you should consider. Not for Ohio State, honestly, for Michigan. Because they're better defensively and they're more of a threat, I think, than Ohio State is.
I think when you look at this, and I agree with you, I think Michigan, and as we've seen the matchups here too, like Michigan is a tougher challenge for Penn State than Ohio State, right? Like, you talk about things that sometimes defy logic. I think about the 2014 game. Penn State takes Ohio State to double overtime in a game that Penn State had no business being in, coming off of sanctions.
My sophomore year of college, for what it's worth, just to make you feel a little older.
Yikes. Yeah. But to me, it's like you just match up better against some teams, right? Like it just doesn't explain it sometimes.
They could out-athlete Michigan. They can't they couldn't out-athlete Ohio State because Ohio State was like top of the line athletically, right? I think that was a lot of it for those years.
No, for sure. And I think Penn State, again, because this is a year-round race, right? It's a race with NIL. It's a race with facilities. It's certainly a race in recruiting. And this week, it's going to be a race with the on-field product. And have you caught up, especially 5 years after you said, you know, we're great, not yet elite. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, John, because we're going to be talking to Ohio State all week. We'll have our preview episode up. Early in the week, Bill Landis will be joining us. Good friend, does a hell of a job covering Ohio State.
Good Phillies fan.
Well, we're not talking about that. Bill was Bill was my Lady Lions beat partner back in the day at the Collegian. Really, really great guy. But we'll bring you guys that conversation next week. But to me, like tonight, Penn State kept their foot on the gas, and from a health perspective, I think they're in a pretty good place, right? Because you got Harrison Wallace back. Seems like he came out of the game okay.
He looks totally like he looks like there's no sign of injury or anything like that.
Yeah, and now JB Nelson, this is the one that I won't say I'm surprised that he didn't play, right? Because last we saw him, he was on a cart at Northwestern, and James Franklin, essentially, the deal is if it was season ending, James Franklin would say as much. He has not said as much, so it's
and he's been asked
ending.
About him. Yeah, so he's been asked about him, given the opportunity to say that it's season ending, and he hasn't.
Did you see? I was scanning the sidelines pregame during the game for JB Nelson. I didn't even see him on the sidelines. I couldn't missed him, but I mean, I was
now,
doing.
Yeah, there's like those binoculars, and I have a love-hate relationship. But I was scanning the sideline and like did not see him when I was looking for him.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, Venga Wane got the start at left guard, which expected. I mean, that was kind of what we saw against Northwestern.
he got beat on that sack by Aller, or that where third Aller down got sacked. Sack. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It looked like him. He missed the block, and it looked like Norzad might have missed. There might have been a miscommunication or something, but like that was bad. But generally speaking, Ioane is like good. Like I don't think like I for as good as I think JB Nelson has been, mm-hmm. they're deep enough at the offensive line spots that I don't think that it's too much of a concern if Nelson can't go, because I think they're just they're really good along the offensive line. Isn't it kind of wild just to take a step back for a second? How little we've talked about the offensive line of a Penn State football team, because even last year we were discussing it because it was like, oh, this is surprising. Now they're so good, you don't even mention it. That's
a good point. Because man, we've seen some really bad offensive lines here, and you're right. I mean, it's unusual, but it's also a hell of a credit to Phil Troutwine, the way they've recruited, the way they've developed Frank Leonard, these guys. Too. Yeah, Frank Leonard, who still living above James Franklin's garage. James mentioned that this past week, and I followed it up and was like, I gotta ask there, like, what's the deal? And Frank and James drive in and out of the facility together, which seems like a really fascinating relationship that is just, you know, part of coaching, part of kind of this transient profession where Leonard's family isn't here this year, I guess they haven't been, so he's
I think he is he said he has one kid in high school, one in college, and he didn't want to move them, which makes sense.
Yeah, you
know, that happens by the way, that happens a lot in coaching, and I think more than people realize. You know, just as an example, I remember when JD Byers was hired as a men's basketball assistant at Penn State, hadn't lived with his wife yet, essentially, since they got married, because she's a volleyball coach at Virginia Tech and he was at VCU with Mike Rhodes. So it's like they hadn't lived together, essentially. And he got right after he took the job at Penn State, he got offered a job as an assistant at Virginia Tech. And it's like, well, I could finally live with my wife. So like he took the job and left after, I think it was like 10 days or something like that, but who can blame you, right? In that scenario, it's a coaching. I think we don't talk about it enough, how like really stressful it can be on a family and like on all of that aspect of it.
It's a crazy, like absolutely crazy profession. And yes, these people make a lot of money. Their jobs are nothing like ours. Right. I mean, it's just so different. And I think like you see some of those instances, right? And I think we got one of those tonight after the game where, man, the clock's ticking. We do not want to talk about UMass. We don't want to ask James Franklin much about UMass. We're ready to start firing the Ohio State questions. Yeah. And he's like, can I just have a few hours of normalcy? Like, I just want to go home, hang out with my wife. Like, his friend Mighty from Pittsburgh was in town. I wrote a story about James and Mighty when I was at the Post-Gazette years ago, back when Penn State did the coach's caravan. I forget how I even found out about it, but like, this is his guy from back in the day, like his good friend. And I just remember
he comes in for every game.
Yeah, he's here all the time. I met them in Pittsburgh, and James was like going around looking at, gosh, I think it was either his grandma or his aunt's house. There was some connection to Pittsburgh, but he met us there on the caravan stop, and I spent like the afternoon with Mighty. Fascinating guy. But again, James is like, I just want to hang out with my friend, with my wife, with my kids, have a few hours of normalcy, and like, come Tuesday, I promise I will answer all of your Ohio State questions. But right now, like, they wanted to enjoy it. The mood in the locker room, apparently, based off of players we asked, you would not be able to tell that this was like celebrating a win against UMass. Like, they celebrated like as if this was any other big win. Those of us in the tunnel were able to see Penn State run off. They're doing, which I think is a really great idea this year.
They have the win cam. And I got a little meta on that when I took a video of the win cam video being taken, which is
it's almost like being in the tunnel, and the dry spot was the right place to be.
Listen, I made my way there eventually.
We all got there eventually. But I do think like they celebrated this win hard. You know, it goes back to you and I talked about this earlier in the week, John. Like, you only get so many opportunities to play this game, so many opportunities in Beaver Stadium. Yes, to us, it's about the news cycle doesn't stop. We're moving on to Ohio State. But for them, they wanted to enjoy this. Chop Robinson after the game, I asked him something about Ohio State. I forget exactly what it was. And he was like, I haven't even had an hour yet. And I was like, all right, man, fair. Like, that's fine. Yeah. But, you know, they wanted to enjoy it. They wanted to have fun.
Yeah. And that's like the nature of it, too. I think Yeah, we were going around asking whoever we could, right, about Ohio State and kind of how quickly you flip that switch was the thing that I asked a bunch mm-hmm. of guys. And like they all said essentially, you know, tomorrow, meaning Sunday, is when they'll kind of flip the switch and be focusing on that because, you know, they should enjoy a win, right? It's a shutout. They put up 63. Yes, UMass is bad. Yes, they were outmatched. But they took care of business and played how they should have, right, if you especially the defense. So I think that's a
don't take status quo for granted, right?
Yeah, like, right. Like how often? And James mentions this mm-hmm. all the time, and it might be tired to some people, but it is a good point. Like don't get tired of the fact that you're winning games because you never know when you can just lose a game that maybe you shouldn't. And by the way, we saw that again tonight. Like, mm-hmm. and this happens. This one, it feels like we should see coming at this point. A Pitt team that feels like it is rudderless, a Louisville team coming off a Notre Dame win. And of course, Pitt wins right at home 38-21 in like pretty convincing fashion because that's
and
how this goes.
It's quarterback, John.
Yes, Christian Veyer. And I am not even opening that can of worms. We are
Stevie.
Not having that discussion. Stevie. Yeah. Christian or CV, whatever you want to call it.
Whose name we've heard 20 variations of, yes. a few of them from him and his family. We're moving on.
Yeah, that is not something we have to worry about anymore, fortunately. Looks like he played well, you know what I mean? Not the highest completion percentage, but threw 2 touchdowns. Looked like the offense was finally moving the ball for Pitt. This isn't a Pitt podcast, though. But yeah, like it is a good example of like what it takes week in and week out to be undefeated. You cannot slip up at all. Maybe you can make mistakes against UMass. Maybe you can make them against Delaware. You can't against West Virginia. West Virginia found that out, by the way, the other night when they lost on a Hail Mary to Houston at the last second. Some of us were watching another sporting event.
It was Thursday Night Football. Yeah, you're right, John. Thursday Night Football. Yeah, we're all locked into the Chiefs. Yeah,
we were all watching Braves-Phillies game 4. But no, I do think, like, again, like, every team gets to find out like pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin was a 9.5-point favorite today against Iowa and like just couldn't do anything offensively and lost in what was one of the ugliest games of the year. Like you cannot take these wins for granted. So I'll never
Big
be critical
10 West,
of them.
Man.
Big Ten West, man. Which also I know they're getting rid of divisions, but would have included Oregon and Washington if they didn't, which was just an absolute shootout going on at the same time as Iowa, Wisconsin, which was a really beautiful juxtaposition. But no, I think they're right for it, right? Like, I think they handle that exactly how they should. There was one thing that James Franklin said in the postgame presser that he brought up again. I don't know if you saw this. Evidently, during a broadcast today, Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt mentioned
I heard about it. Yeah.
These comments that James made, and there was essentially a shot at James for making comments about scheduling despite the fact that Penn State was playing UMass. Listen, if you want Penn State propaganda, this is not the podcast to listen to. Let me say this. James Franklin was not taking a shot at Michigan. He was not taking a shot at Ohio State. He was agreeing with that idea. He wants Penn State to schedule that way. I don't know how many times people have to say this. It's so like we're in a weird era where everyone tries to take everything as criticism to flip into. Mm-hmm. It's like when Georgia is like, nobody believed in us. Like,
yeah,
guys,
okay.
Everyone thought you were going undefeated. But no, it's like this era of using anything to fuel that fire. He was not being critical of Ohio State or Michigan. He brought it up again post-game. He said, I think he called him interesting.
Because interesting comments, yeah.
Yeah.
Still clearly bothering him.
Yes, which honestly, it keeps coming up. Like, people keep bringing it up. I don't blame him for being bothered in that scenario because, like, at some point,
but John,
like,
I don't
people again, need to read the context.
I have been here every single day since James Franklin stepped off the plane at the University Park Airport. This week for me was super weird in that
yes.
he says the whole explosive play comment, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. James is like trying to be funny, like whatever. Yeah. I think nothing of it, right? Like, I know what the reporter was trying to ask. Totally get it.
We talked about that on the preview episode too. Yeah, we knew
the scheduling comment. I understood what he was saying. You can go ahead and Google and see the schedules. Like, he's been consistent about this. Again, this did not rise to the level of me even writing about it or even thinking of writing about it. And so I just don't. And again, you and I were here on the ground covering this team day in and day out. And it's frustrating for us when you see stuff like this happen. Cause I'm like, guys, like, does anyone read anything or like pay attention to what we're reporting or saying? And I know I'm preaching to the choir here because you're here listening to the Nittany Dispatch, you obviously care. You obviously are very up on Penn State. But yeah, I mean, it's just bizarre some of the stuff that's happening. And I guess maybe some of that has to
It's just UMass week. I think people are trying to find something.
Was it UMass week? People were like bored as hell? Or was it the fact that like Penn State is in this prominent position nationally that more people are like
under the microscope
for ways?
Now.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird week for me in that regard. Like, and like, I just didn't get any of it.
It's not like you heard anyone yelling something like, I don't know, Attaboy Harper in the locker room or anything like that. Like, it's not like anything like that happened here.
I got nothing.
Yeah, just had to throw that one in there.
It has been
a very strange week from that perspective. And I do think it's, you know, that's a good leaping off point into the talk about their standing, right, where they're at nationally. And I think that's just a sign that they're under the microscope constantly now. Because, again, I'm not just going to defend Penn State for no reason, right? Like, we try and do the job, you know, like, cross our T's, dot our I's. Like, do
trust
it how
me,
it
if there's someone who, yeah. I'm sure people are alarmed hearing this right now. Like, Audrey's, you know, defending right. Penn State, like, something must be wrong.
We've both been on the wrong end of when James doesn't like a question that you've asked. We've all been there before.
Yeah.
Neither of these comments that happened, we usually have a good sense, I like to think, of when, okay, he said something or someone said something or he did something that maybe will go viral a little. The push-ups a couple weeks ago at the whiteout when you mentioned
now,
the,
so yeah
like, it. Which is nice and very funny to me. But, like, that was a moment where you're like, okay, the people pick up on this, like, whatever, yeah. It's going to become a thing. The coffee thing, you could see it coming. This was, I left the press conference Tuesday, went to a staff meeting and like, didn't think anything of it. Right. Like, I was like, yeah, this is like, nothing happened. Like, didn't think anything of what happened with the deep shot question. Didn't think anything of, you know, the scheduling stuff. And like, you see these tweets blow up and it's like, I am begging people just to read the transcript or watch the video. Like, there's nothing here.
I didn't even tweet about the explosive play thing because I'm like, oh, like, whatever. Like, it's a storyline we've written in a million times.
Yep.
We'll
find out answers about next week, by the way.
I was going to say, we're going to find out a heck of a lot about QB1 this coming week. And we're also going to find out about the explosive plays because, John, do you think Penn State can win in Columbus by kind of grinding clock, doing what they've been doing? Because here's the other thing. I'll flip back to him. Nick Singleton got the start Saturday afternoon. Katron Allen, to me, looked like the more explosive back.
Yeah.
Allen, not 9 carries for 68 yards. Singleton, 15 carries for 79 yards. If we're in the business of splitting hairs, whether we like it or not. Singleton has yet to rush for 100 yards in a game this season. Not the stat I expected to be presenting here at the midpoint. Katron Allen does have 100 yards in a game this year. But, I mean, collectively, it's fine. But we're not seeing the run game, I guess, like I expected to see it.
So, a couple of things. I think they can. And I don't, like, I'm usually not that, you know, you got to ground and pound, whatever. Like, that's not my general philosophy with football. But I think they can because, again, it goes back to them. I think they're better than Ohio State. And so I think they can impose their will, sort of. I don't think that's as true against Michigan, right? I think they need to stretch the field a little more. I do think it would help to do that against Ohio State. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing to stretch the field. But to your point about Katron Allen and Nick Singleton, I think Katron Allen's the best running back on this team right now. And it's not a knock on Nick Singleton. He just looks, he didn't, to his credit, especially in the second half, third quarter, end of the second quarter, Singleton didn't look as hesitant. But in recent weeks, he's looked kind of hesitant. And Katron Allen is a very decisive runner, right? Trey Potts is a very decisive runner. Like, they see the hole, they hit it, they go. And we see Katron fighting for extra yards all the time and all that stuff. Right now, it feels like, and I don't want to speak for Nick Singleton or anything like that. I didn't speak to him post-game. I don't think he was made available. But it looks like he's looking for the big play, right? Like, he's looking for the crease to hit it and go and make the big play happen. Maybe there's some pressure there. I don't know.
I do think,
like, Katron Allen right now should just be their starting running back. And, you know, I'm going to write about this in Good, Bad, Ugly. You'll be able to see that at SundayDaily.com. But, like, I think he should be getting, like, 65% of the carries right now. He is the better back. He's less of a tell when he's out there because he's also, for my money, their best pass blocker and their best receiver as a running back. So you're not kind of telling on yourself what you're doing when he's out there, or you're at least not taking a step back in, like, either the run game or passing game when he's out there. And I think, you know, against Ohio State, you need to guarantee yourself when 4 yards are available, you got to get them, right? Like, you can't take a 2 yard loss on an easy 4 yard gain. As much as you want to create big plays and everything like that, it is important to get the ball down the field and move the ball down the field and not let a possession go, right? Because if, let's say there's 4 yards available on first down and you can take that, but you end up getting a 2 yard loss because you're looking for the big play. Second and 12 is a bad place to be against this Ohio State defense, right? Like, second and 6, workable. You can do something with it. Maybe you hit a big play, whatever, but you cannot let yourself get behind the sticks. And right now I have more faith that Catron Allen is going to consistently gain yards on offense than I do with Nick Singleton. They're both really talented. That could flip, but right now, to me, Allen's better.
Yeah, Allen's long run this week, 18 yards. Singleton's longest was 10. The run that stood out to me was Allen's 9-yard touchdown run. Actually, Nick Dawkins was in at right guard there because, again, they were working
a lot of that early, too.
Yeah, we did see a good bit of Dawkins at right guard today. Saw Drew Shelton at right tackle, at left tackle. And again, this is like the perfect game to start flipping the page toward the future a little bit too. But to me, on that 9-yard touchdown run, Allen was patient. And again, it was a mismatch up front, but the line gave him a ton of room, kept his legs churning, gets in for the touchdown. And to me, that was one of Penn State's, I think, better runs this season. It's been interesting. Now, I feel like, John, we could say all of this, and the thing that I will not rule out is you could still see Nick Singleton bust off like a 70-yard run in the horseshoe. Like,
that's the thing.
Just, he's so explosive at some point. It has to happen. And I'm flabbergasted that it hasn't this point in various reasons, depending how defenses have played them. We talked to Jaywan Sider late this past week. That's something that Jaywan hit on. He's really thrilled with all of these backs and kind of their development. They've been catching passes, but to me, that's the element. I was like, and I was talking to someone when I was leaving the press box today, and I'm like, you know what? You can't rule it out with Singleton because we've seen it before, and we're going to see it again at some point. I just don't know, you know, none of us just know when that's going to hit.
Yeah, to me right now, Singleton, for NFL fans, and obviously, honestly, Penn State fans will remember Kenneth Walker III for his time at Michigan State. Right now at with the Seahawks, he is ultimate boomer bust, right? He's either picking up a yard or he's breaking a 40-yard gain, right? Like, that's kind of what it feels like with Singleton.
It puts you in fantasy football hell, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, it has its benefits when you need that kind of big play. He can be the guy that can flip a game. But when you were kind of in a close game, I think you'd probably rather have the guy that you can trust to get the 4. Because 4 yards carry is almost always a win. You can look at success rate and stuff like that. Like, 4 yards on first down is usually a good spot, right? Like, you want to – ideally, you get 5 yards on first down. But I think – you know what I mean? If you can put yourself in position to not be behind the sticks, you're in a good place. Catron Allen just gives you that right now. And I think the trust has to be placed there. I'm not saying anything that, like, Nick Singleton's bad or anything like that, to be clear.
Yeah. He's very, very good. We got to be cautious in this day and age because you could end up as
I don't want to be the next clip that's circulating on Twitter. That is a bad place to be. I never want to, the job is not to be the story, and I would like to remain not being the story. But no, I think, like, this is a good sign that the running game might be trending in the right direction, just maybe a different way than because honestly, if you'd asked me preseason, I would have said Singleton was the better runner, and that probably, I don't know that I would say it wasn't close, but I thought it was apparent at the very least.
And we kept hearing all off season, it was, hey, Nick Singleton's getting a lot of love, a lot of attention. Don't forget about Catron Allen. Don't forget about, and it felt very
makes sense now.
At some points, but now I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely see it. You know, again, it's a good problem to have if you're Penn State. You got a lot of playmakers, and Bo Prabula got the entire fourth quarter, which brings me back, John, in our pregame predictions. You had a very bold take, and I tweeted at you during the game because I'm at the other end of the press box, so I can't, you know, come down and
some of us have seats at the 50-yard line.
Yeah, some of us are like probably buried behind a pole or something. No, I'm in seat 69. It's a very nice seat.
Nice.
But you had said that you thought Bo Prabula was going to enter this game very early. Fourth quarter was his.
So
again, the game was out of hand.
Well, also the third quarter would have happened had Daquan Hardy not returned that second punt for a touchdown. Like, Prabula was going to come in there. I honestly thought like he should have been in the first drive after the half. I think you can make the argument that he should have been in that last drive before halftime. Like he is, I don't know. I think the goal today should have been get out healthy. That's it. Yep. Like get out healthy, get to Ohio State.
And I think it looked like they accomplished that from
what
we saw. Looked like
but it. Like to mitigate risk, once you're up 28-0, all of them, pull every single starter. You don't need to play anymore. It is no longer your turn. I honestly thought there was credence to it. And if we're being realistic, like there was a chance that that had actually happened had they not stalled out those first two drives.
Right.
Had they scored, like, because they were moving the ball decently. I said it was a brutal start on offense. Great starting
field position, too. Yeah. I mean, that was the other part, yeah.
I said it was a brutal start on offense. To be clear, a punt and a fumble against the worst defense in the country is a brutal start on offense. Just didn't expect it to continue, and it didn't, so it wasn't a surprise. I think, like, the if they score on those two drives and, you know, suddenly it's 14-0 that early, I think we probably see Prabula in the second quarter. They definitely also got off to a slower start than I anticipated with the punt and the fumble. I would have had Drew Aller out of there so quickly. I'd have had Keandre Lambert Smith out of there so quickly. Each and every one of those dudes. Like, I would have had Olu would have played a snap. It would have been like, you're good.
I'm gonna have to look at, because I have to go back and look at the snap counts for Olu and see what that final number is, because I know we were having a little over under on 30 the other day, and because Penn State, I think they ran 62 plays.
I think he went over it, like, which is surprising. Like, I don't know. I really thought, like, there was no reason to have him in. I get it, like, you don't want a guy to be sitting on ice essentially for 2 weeks in a row heading into a massive game, but, like, that dude's good. Like, you the last guy on the team, well, you gotta worry about.
And here's the thing, and I thought about this because I have a column up at The Athletic. Essentially, you know, not many people wanted to talk about Ohio State, but that didn't stop me from asking people. When has that ever stopped me before?
I know. But we all know.
We all have been there. I was doing some probing post-game with my questions. And Olu Fashanu, remember last year, the end of the game, he was on the sideline riding the bike when things fizzled in the fourth quarter. And I talked to Olu and his family this past winter, and they actually had met with James Franklin around that same time about Olu's future. And after that game, and he was like, yeah, I'm coming back. Like, obviously there were many reasons at play, but he thought that this could be a special team and that he wanted to be part of it. And so again, like, as I was writing my column after the game, I'm thinking of that and I'm like, oh yeah. Like, remember he was on the sideline when everything fell apart, man. John, there are going to be so many, there were only two scouts listed today in the press box, a scout from the Packers and a scout from the Falcons. Anytime there's a Packers scout there, my fan antenna goes up. Packers have been there quite a bit this year. One day they were watching Chop Robinson at practice very intently. Again, I'm watching them watch him. So, you know, it's, we'll see. But man, there's so many NFL matchups next week in that game. The scout list is going to be crazy. Like, that's going to be
a pretty packed matchup. Press box in general, right? Like, it's going to be scouts. It's going to be media members. It is going to
Yahoo's like us media members. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, like, honestly, like, this is going to be a really fun week. It's going to be exhausting. Again, typical sports writer complaint. I know.
Terribly exhausting week. It's going to be great.
And you're all right for criticizing me for complaining. But, like, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, this is one of the two most exciting matchups of the year for Penn State. And if they win this one, oh, man. Like, the playoff rankings come out soon, I think in 2 weeks, right? 2.5 weeks,
yes, whatever it's usually, it is. Usually around Halloween. So, yeah, gosh, yeah, we're in October, so, yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I was gonna say that I think they have a chance to be the number one team in the country if they beat Ohio State.
John,
listen, it's it is very possible though, right? Yeah. Like, if they get that win, Ohio State's only loss.
Like, you look at this season in college football, and it's been crazy. And Penn State again, as boring as it's been at a couple points. I'm thinking of you, Delaware. I'm thinking of you, UMass. They've stayed the course. You know, they've checked every single box to date. And I think that's the thing that you can't lose sight of. Right. I had a couple people tweeting at me during the game. They're like, man, this is great. It's a stress-free Saturday. And I was like, yeah, you're right. But next week, man, you're going to be losing it. But to me, that's the exciting thing, right? Everybody, when the schedule was made, you looked at this game, you looked at the Michigan game, and you said, that's the season, right? That's why James Franklin's making $10 million a year, right? Roughly, like, for games like this. That's why everybody cares so much about that 365-day-a-year arms race. It's to see what happens on the field. That's why it's been 5 years, you know, since the great to elite comment. This is your measuring stick, and the week is here. Like, lean into it, embrace it, enjoy it. It's going to be a super fun week. But you're right, John, it's going to be exhausting.
Yeah, again, I mean, it, yeah, which is totally understandable.
We're going to be taking energy drink recommendations, yes, all that stuff.
Always. But no, like three undefeated teams that were in the top 15 went down today. Like, that happens far too often to take these things for granted. You know, if you're a Penn State fan, Oregon losing to Washington, USC getting smoked by Notre Dame, yeah, and Louisville losing to Pitt. Like, you're down to very few undefeated teams left in the Power Five. And so, like, I think, you know, like I said, there is, I'm not saying it's going to happen, there's a world where Penn State's like a top three team in the first playoff rankings. I don't think that's, you know, outside the realm of possibility at all. And there's a world where, like, Michigan, Penn State is like number two against number three, which would be a lot of fun. But I'm not going to get that far ahead of things. It is, we're already advancing past Ohio State, seemingly the most exciting game of the year, I think, to this point, and one that is carries a lot of weight for a lot of reasons. I'll be writing about that this week. I know you'll be writing about the matchup as well. It is an exciting time, I think, if you're a Penn State fan. You know, and we will have you covered on every front. You know, we'll be back midweek, well, early in the week this week. We'll be talking to Bill Landis, as Audrey said. We'll be
Dollar B for sure.
That's right. Again, just notable Phillies fan. Very important note, mm-hmm, here as we close things down.
I hear they play this week, John. I hear
they do. I heard that they are the only NL East team playing this week.
Man, I've taken a lot of flack this week, deservedly so. I will not say, even, John, congratulations to your Phillies. You. They were by far the better team. The Braves have broken my heart yet again. But right, as if you can see behind me, there we go. Yeah. I'll get my 2021 World Series sign up there next to my Ronald Acuña Jr. bobblehead. So, you know,
which I also, because okay, we went to that game together.
That's right. Yeah. So you have one of those too. Yeah.
And I will be wearing, I hope everyone enjoys my attire for so tune into the video podcast if you would like to see what I have on. For,
yeah, hopefully I don't spill a beer on myself again, because I hope nobody caught that today. So,
yeah, for the early, you know, the midweek episode this week. But we will also have you covered from Columbus. Audrey and I will be recording after the game. We'll have every bit of this broken down. I imagine we may set our personal record for length of podcast, because there's going to be so much to talk about. Very exciting times, though. Like I mentioned earlier, if you like what you see, if you're enjoying listening to the podcast, rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff on Apple, on YouTube, wherever you find us.
Five stars.
Yeah, that's right. Five stars. Because this is a five-star duo right here, in our opinion, at least. But once again, thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.